Good morning. It's time for the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Hi, good morning. This is J. Marie Schaefer.
And good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour, where we answer your questions about wills, trusts, Medicaid planning, probate, anything related to estate planning and elder law. We're here to answer your questions. And you can give us a call at 518-476-5900, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. So good morning, Kim. We have a lovely, warm weekend today, don't we?
It's crazy. I was just out taking care of all of our animals and worked up a sweat. not something you expect to do the first week of November.
Right. It does not feel like November at all. It's actually very nice if you like warmer weather.
This is true. But I'm ready for, like, nice, crisp fall days and make that transition because, of course, happen is we'll go immediately into, you know, negative temperatures and feet of snow. So
that's what happens. That's right.
But I guess the one complaint has definitely been nice for doing outside stuff much longer than we normally would have been able to.
Yes, that's right. Absolutely. And I was just going to say this is a good time to remind everyone that we get an extra hour of sleep tonight. We get to set our clocks back. I always love the extra hour of sleep.
Right?
That's right. So,
go ahead.
I wanted to mention that this month is National Family Caregivers Month. And it's really a month to recognize and support caregivers who are taking care of other family members, you know, that are elderly or disabled or younger disabled, but anyone who is a caregiver. It's a recognition month for caregivers. And we're going to talk a little bit about that in a moment, but we do have an event coming up. Kim, you want to just talk about that event a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So in recognition and, you know, part of, sort of honoring all of the caregivers that we work with on a regular basis, because that's a big part of the base of our clients, right, are folks who are sort of in the trenches and taking care of folks. We are in a free yoga class for caregivers at the Colony Library, which is going to be really cool. They've donated their space, and we have a yoga teacher that's going to come in and teach a nice hour-long yoga class. Everything is provided, and there's going to be snacks for the caregivers, so it's going to be a really nice event. It's going to be on Tuesday, November 22nd, and it's going to run from 11 to 12:30. It's going to be at the Stedman Room there in the library. And all you have to do is bring yourself, but we do ask that you register through the library. You can either go on their website and register, or you can call, and it should be a really, really great after, you know, or I guess late morning, just to kind of recharge and focus a little bit on taking care of you.
Right. It's going to be really great. And like you said, you don't even have to bring a yoga mat. They're going to provide yoga mats. There'll be snacks there. And, you know, if you're a caregiver, you really need to care for yourself. And that's something we do talk about a lot with our families. We also talk about respite care. So, and respite isn't necessarily for long stretches of time. It can be for, like, a class like this to get out and take a break. And this would be a good to take advantage of someone to help you out so you could take a break. You know, caregivers, you have to take care of yourselves, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, that's one of the big things that you know, encompasses in my job, right, is it's not just helping people find home care. I mean, that's certainly a big part of what I do. But again, a lot is sort of, you know, from that care management piece and being a geriatric care manager is, you know, I really take a holistic look. And one of the first things we do is focus on the caregiver, because as a caregiver, if you're not taking care of yourself and you're not in the best emotional, physical, you know, state that you can be in, obviously you're not giving as much as you can to the person you're also caring for. So, you know, we really focus on caregivers taking care of themselves. And to your point, Jamarie, respite is wonderful. It's incredible. But what I tell caregivers, you don't want to use that respite time to go to the grocery store. You don't want to, you know, right. Use it to go get your hair done. Use it to go play in your bowling league. Use it to go take an art class. Use it to take a nap. You know, it really is important to take care of really your own health, because you've got to be strong enough to be able to take care of that person who's relying on you every day.
Yeah, I was just thinking of a family that we met with last week, Kim, and they, the mom and the daughter have been taking care of the dad for, I think they said, a couple of years, and they said they haven't had a vacation. And we mentioned respite care, and they got very excited. They're like, we could go away, you know, like even right. overnight, right? But they right. were really looking forward to just utilizing that respite care and getting a break, because they're doing it 24 hours a day.
Right. And we're lucky in our area that we have a lot of organizations and a lot of different grant funded programs that provide respite. So it's not even, I mean, we talk about community Medicaid all of the time. And while that's certainly a great tool, respite really is a wonderful way to start off. And, you know, we have the Eddie Alzheimer's Services, we have Catholic Charities, we have the Caregiver Support Initiative up north. And what's great now, too, about the Caregiver Support Initiative, it's not just focused on Alzheimer's and dementia. They have a whole newly funded program that's health and wellness that's sort of, you know, inclusive of all caregivers. So it's not just for folks that are dealing with Alzheimer's and dementia. So really, you know, it's recognized and it's out there that this is something that's truly very needed. And even through, you know, the Offices for Aging, there's the RSVP program, so the Retired Senior Volunteer Program. And those folks also, you know, provide volunteer respite. There's great organizations like CareLinks based in Clifton Park. The Saratoga Senior Center has Community Connections, which also provides respite. So there are lots of avenues and lots of ways for us to be able to, you know, help families get that much-needed break, for sure.
Yep, that's absolutely true. Another thing that we recommend to clients that was actually closed for COVID, but they're opening now again, are the daycare programs. And we do recommend that a lot. And those are actually covered by community Medicaid. We do encourage, it's not suitable for everyone, but it is suitable for some individuals. And that's a good way for our caregivers to get a break.
Right. And like we've talked about, you know, a lot of the day programs, you know, there's a social model and there's a medical model. And what's really nice about the medical model is, you know, particularly for folks that may not have great accommodations in their home to be able to take care of some of the personal care needs, a medical model can do that. You know, they can do some personal care. They can do some bathing and some toileting and incontinence care. They can do higher level of medical need. You know, example, somebody needs insulin or, you know, some kind of special medication, they can manage those things because they have a nurse on staff that can oversee those things. So again, lots of alternatives to placement, lots of alternatives to, you know, being at home all day, every day. And I really love day programs too, because the primary caregiver, it gives them the home to themselves, right? And it's, sometimes it's not, I mean, having a caregiver is great. You know, having a paid staff person is great. But a lot of times we just need to be on our own home, you know, to do to read, to do, and not worry about either entertaining, you know, an aide or making sure that your loved one is being taken care of the way you want them to take care of. So the day program is great, provides a social outlet, you know, meals, great supervision, activity. We see a lot of times when folks utilize day program, they come home and, you know, some folks with different kinds of dementia do have things like sundowning, or they may reverse their clocks where they sleep during the day and they're awake at night. A lot of times with a structured program like that, they're kept engaged throughout the day so that by the time they get home, they can have dinner and then they end up sleeping through the night. So again, gives that caregiver the much needed break that they need, because if you're not getting sleep, as we all know, whether we've been a caregiver or a parent or whatever, if you're not getting sleep, it really can, you know, take a toll on you.
That's right. That's right. So I'm just going to read here from the Caregiver Action Network. They have, 10 tips for caregivers. And I think these were important. I'm just going to read through them and then we can get your ideas on them, Kim. So number one is seek support from other caregivers. You are not alone. Number two, just take care of your own health so that you can be strong enough to take care of your loved one. Number three is accept offers of help and suggest specific things people can do to help you. Number four, I like to learn how to communicate effectively with doctors. Number five is caregiving is hard work, so take respite breaks often. Number six is watch out for signs of depression and don't delay getting professional help when you need it. Number seven is be open to new technologies that can help you care for your loved ones. Number eight is organize medical information so it's up to date and easy to find. Nine is, of course, make sure your legal documents are in order. And number 10, give yourself credit for doing the best you can in one of the toughest jobs there is. So I think that was some great tips. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, no, those are all really, really great tips. You know, when we talk about getting support, they're, you know, joining a support group is a great way to do that. And there are lots of area organizations that, you know, host support groups. And, you know, while the pandemic wasn't, you know, great, right, some good things did come from the pandemic. I mean, more and more people understand technology and being able to do a support group via Zoom has been a really big thing. There are lots of different organizations now that host Zoom support groups. And that's good because, I mean, there's telephone support groups as well, but Zoom is nice because you're still able to make a connection, you know, face-to-face with people. And you can do it from the comfort of your home. A lot of times it's difficult for caregivers to get away for, you know, 2.5-3 hours, because you figure by travel time to a location where a support group's being held and, you know, being there for an hour and then chatting afterward, you know, it's a chunk of time. So being able to offer different groups virtually is really nice. And, you know, again, we have organizations like the Alzheimer's Association, the Parkinson Foundation, Albany Med. I mean, the list is sort of, you know, Eddie Alzheimer's, we've talked a lot about those different groups that do provide some of those type of support. I mean, we talked a little bit about taking care of your own health, you know, by using respite, but you need to go see the doctor as well, right? I think a lot of times when we're taking care of somebody, we kind of push our own needs aside because we feel like we don't have the time to do that. But it's super important for us to continue to maintain our own health, because what happens, you know, often we're actually meeting with people in our office because something has happened to the primary caregiver. And now, you know, the kids or maybe a friend or something's coming to us because now they've got two people that need to be taken care of. And so often that's a big focus of what we talk to folks about, is how important it is to take care of yourself. I mean, Jay Marie, you and I share a client that, you know, He's pretty famous. We know when things aren't going well, because he sort of starts hitting all of us up in the, you know, that have a network. of support. And, you know, we all see the train wreck happening, coming, right? We all see what's going to happen if he does forward and doesn't take care of himself. So those are all things that we just continue to encourage him to do.
Excuse me, guys. Would you like to take a phone call? Just got something in here. Diana from Albany. Are you ready?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, here you go. Hi, Diana.
Good morning.
Hi, how can we help you?
I think that's something that's not been addressed very much is the difficulties of transportation all your appointments.
Mm-hmm. I agree. That is a difficult question. And Ken, you know, there are some medical transportation or it's available, and sometimes Medicaid pays for it.
But it's very difficult if you're not on Medicaid. And the taxis are not reliable.
Right. And to your, there are lots of challenges. You're correct. There are lots of different organizations that provide transportation, like the Colony Senior Services Center. One thing that I would encourage you to do, where do you live?
I live at home in Albany.
In Albany. So I would encourage you to reach out to the Albany Guardian Society. They actually have a phenomenal transportation resource guide, and it includes all of the transportation resources in the Capital District. And it's quite...
Do they infringe upon any of your other medical choices? I've heard that they do.
I don't believe so. They're going to provide transportation to wherever you need to go, so I don't think there's any limitations there.
Okay, because I can't use Uber or anything because I don't have that modern a phone.
That's true. And a lot of older folks don't have, you know, the Uber app right on their phone. But like Kim said, this directory will give you some places to call where you can get volunteer or, you know, transportation. So that would be a good resource.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right. Thank you.
You're Bye-bye. Welcome. Thank you. Yes, that was a good question because transportation is a big piece of this. And you do have to look for organizations. I know there are lots of organizations that do volunteer to drive you to doctor's appointments and such. And as you said, Kim, they can look at the book from the Albany Guardian Society. Right. So both the Albany Guardian Society, the Albany Guardian Society sort of handles the Capital District, you know, Saratoga South. And then we have the Conklin Center, that's sort of Saratoga North, that has a transportation guide. And they have their own transportation program as well, which is really, really lovely. And they manage transportation within 25-mile radius of Glens Falls. So, you know, and if they can't do it themselves, and they really help find some resources. So it's out there. You just have to kind of network yourself into the right connections. But transportation can be a huge barrier to folks, you know, doing some of these things that we're talking about. You know, if you don't drive and you don't have reliable family close by, it does make it more challenging to be able to take care of yourself and do some of those things that we're talking about today. Right, that's true. And if you want to be our second caller, you can give us a call at 518-476-5900, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. So I kind of want to go back to one of the tips there for caregivers and having to do with communicating with doctors and with two tips, and then getting your medical information organized. There's lots of different documents that we can use to do that. And I know we talk about a healthcare proxy frequently, but there's other documents that are important to do. There's your living will. There's a MOLST form. Do you want to explain what a MOLST form is, Kim?
Sure. I mean, that's something that, you know, we really talk to folks about a lot, too. So a MOLST, it stands for Medical Orders for Life-Sustaining Treatment. And the nice thing about a MOLFT is it is much more explicit about your different medical wishes, whether you're do not resuscitate, whether you'd like maybe to have a trial of antibiotics for a short period of time. You know, it really, but it's signed by your physician. So what makes it different than a living will or any other kind of document you would fill out is your doctor completes it with you. And it's a medical order that becomes a part of your medical record. And it follows you everywhere you go. So we're now living in the day of the electronic medical record, right? So this is a form, a document that will get uploaded right to your medical record. So if you're hospitalized unexpectedly or you end up in some sort of crisis situation, they can pull your chart up and they can see that you have a MOLFT, and then they can be able to follow that without actually contacting a healthcare proxy, because you have a signed medical order by your physician. And I know for a lot of folks, the healthcare proxy can be pretty tricky. I mean, it's certainly a document that's worth having. But if that healthcare proxy can't be located or somebody isn't aware of who your healthcare proxy is, there's a lot of time that gets spent where someone may have treatment that they otherwise wouldn't have wanted. So that MOLFT really helps make sure that your wishes are known and that they're practiced. So it's a great, great piece of, you know, when we do estate planning with folks, when we do that it's an important piece to be included with that.
That's right, because, you know, your healthcare proxy, it's only good if you can locate them, if you can contact that person. Right. So, you know, it is important to have that. Sometimes clients ask us, where should I put this? Should I put it in my safe deposit box? And I say, no, that's the last place you should put any of these, at least your healthcare proxy or your power of attorney, because no one will be able to get it there if something happens to you. So whether it's the MOLFT or even if you just have a healthcare proxy, really make sure that your agent has it or has access to it, because you need to have that to get to the doctors or to get to the hospital, so that, you know, the person that you appointed as your agent can talk for you to the doctors.
Right. And to that point, like, there are a lot of great programs out there that we can all participate in that help people sort of find what it is that we want. So there's a great program called the Yellow Dot Program, and it's simply a yellow dot that you can put, like, on your windshield or on your the side of your driver's door. So it identifies that in your glove compartment, there's an envelope that includes all of your very specific information, like, you know, who your choices are, who your healthcare proxy is. Like, it lists all different kinds of important information so it can be easily accessed, particularly if you're in an accident, you can't speak for yourself, or, you know, something happens. You can, there's a great thing called the File of Life. So again, you know, there's a sticker that goes on your house door that, you know, if the emergency services are called, they know to look for a File of Life. And the File of Life, again, includes who your physicians are, what your medications are, who your emergency contacts are, what your wishes are. Most of the time, that's put in a freezer, or a lot of times tell people just to tack it up right on the side of your refrigerator so it's very easily accessible. You never want people to have to go hunting for things.
Yes, I've seen that frequently when we go do home visits, that people have that on their refrigerator or something similar to that. But that's probably in most places someone would look if they came in and they needed to contact someone. These are all good things to have. I mean, some of it goes beyond having the actual legal document in place, but, at, you know, some of the more practicalities of how are you going to use that, right? I know one question we often get is, you know, if I have more than one child, can they work together, or can they both be my healthcare proxy? And they can't, right? But there's some ways, I mean, legally they can't act together, but I always say, hopefully your children are going to talk to each other and come to an agreement on what your care is. Because legally, on a healthcare proxy, you can only appoint one agent to act at a time. It's different than other legal documents where you can have two people at a time. But there's, you know, good reason why one person has to be the spokesperson.
Right.
Do you have some suggestions on who you should pick to be that person?
You want to pick the person who's going to follow what your wishes are. And so often we see this, you know, and I often share my personal experience when my husband and I were doing all of our planning. And, you know, I was just kind of talking about what my wishes were. And I could sense that he really was not comfortable. So at one point I asked, I said, you know, are you all right? And his response was, I can't do this. And I was taken aback because, you know, I thought he was my person, right? And but there were some very conflicting sort of internal things for him that he would have been very challenged to follow through on some of the specific wishes that I had should something happen to me. So, you know, one of these things in our caregiver toolbox is, you know, learning how to communicate effectively with doctors. Yes, that's very important, but we also need to communicate with our people, you know, the people that we are naming into these, you know, into these positions, because we want to make sure that they understand exactly what it is our wishes are. There's nothing worse than folks sitting around a table saying, I have no idea what my mom would want or what my dad would want. And they've been put in charge of that task, and they just really don't know. And so I think, you know, having the conversation is super important. And things change too, you know. That's the other thing we talk to people about. Like, you need to review. I mean, you can't just do your documents and then kind of tuck them away to never be seen again. You really need to review them on a regular basis, particularly for folks that may have some type of chronic, you know, illness. You know, there's lots that we deal with people, you know, Alzheimer's and dementia, there's diabetes, COPD, heart disease, all of these things that are progressive that over time, you know, it may change how you feel about what you want. So you want to make sure that you consistently are checking in and updating those documents and talking to your physicians about what it is that you do and don't want.
All right. Excuse me, guys. We're at the bottom of the hour and you all set to take our first break.
Sounds great. Yes,
all right. Thank you. We'll be back with the Herzog Law Firm Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour in just a moment.
You've been listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. Join us every week to learn more about protecting the assets you've worked hard for, options available for Medicaid planning, and more. With offices located in Corporate Woods in Albany, West Harrison Street in Saratoga Springs, Executive Woods in Clifton Park, and 130 North Front Street in Kingston, our attorneys are here to help you. If you'd like to schedule an appointment to speak with David, Jane Marie, or Harry, please call us during normal business hours, Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. To contact us at our Albany office, call 518-465-7581. Our Saratoga Springs office, 518-581-8131. Our Clifton Park office at 518-952-4010. And our Kingston office at 845-338-6405. Let the Herzog Law Firm help navigate a plan that works for you and your family. Now back to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm.
And welcome back. I am Jane Marie Schaefer.
Hi, good morning. I'm Kim Hance.
And this is the second half of the Medicaid and Estate Planning Hour. And we were talking in the first half of the show about caregivers, because it is National Caregivers Month, and really recognizing and supporting caregivers. And in case you missed it, we have an event coming up on November 22nd at the Colony Town Library, and it's Yoga for Caregivers. It's at 11 o'clock, and it's really an opportunity for caregivers to come, get a break, get some relaxation and stress relief, and talk to other caregivers. it's, you know, really important to kind of build a network and talk to caregivers. But anyway, it's a free event. It's really great. You do have to register online at the Colony Town Library. Yoga mats will be provided. You don't need to bring your own yoga mat. Snacks will be provided and water. So if you do have the time, I would suggest that you take advantage of this event. And also, I wanted to talk about our webinars coming up, where you can get some information about how to legally prepare for some of these challenges coming up. So our webinar week, the first week is first webinar is on November 15th at 2 o'clock, and that's Aging in Place, and where we talk about a lot of the resources that are available for you to stay at home as you age and receive care. On Wednesday, November 16th at 2 o'clock, we have Wills versus Trust, where you can learn about what's the difference between a will and a trust and a revocable and irrevocable trust and which would be best for me. And then on Thursday, November 17th at 2 o'clock, we have Medicaid and estate planning myths, which is a great one. It really talks about some of the myths that are out there about Medicaid planning and gives you the right information. And you can sign up for those on our website at herzoglaw.com. So I kind of wanted to, we were talking a bit about medical information and, you know, how to have that in place for your caregivers to be able to act for you. Another document that's really important to have is a power of attorney. And that appoints someone to act, you know, on your behalf for legal matters or financial matters. And then kind of the way it ties into caregivers is, yes, a lot of people put their spouse first, right? But you have to think beyond the first person that you are naming as your power of attorney. You know, if your spouse is your caregiver and they get overwhelmed or they're not able to do this for you anymore, who should be your backup on your power of attorney? And you should have a backup. Some people have powers of attorney that don't have any alternate agents. And that's, we've seen that happen, Kim. It's not a good idea not to have someone as a backup to all of your legal documents.
No, that's very true. And you know, like we've talked about, it's important for those people to know who they are so that, you know, it makes it easier for everybody to act on your behalf. And that's one of the biggest things that we talk to folks about is we're really trying to extend your independence. And by doing all these things, it really does help us do the planning and it helps you stay independent for a much longer period of time because people understand what your wishes are, you know, and it really does, it keeps you in control longer. If somebody is trying to guess what you want because you can't speak for yourself, it makes it much more challenging for us to be able to do any kind of planning or really understand, you know, what your wishes were or are.
Right, right. You definitely need to let people know what your wishes are. And I know we say this a lot, that, you know, you want to try and avoid guardianship, which is if you don't have a power of attorney or healthcare proxy, no one, and you can't sign a document, right? Let's say you're incapacitated, you can't sign a document anymore. Then the only way to get power to make decisions for you is through a guardianship proceeding. And that's something we try and avoid. That's why we always suggest that you have a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy in place and have alternate agents. So we had a case where we had to do a guardianship because the client had a power of attorney and a healthcare proxy naming her husband, but she didn't have any alternates beyond him. And she was at a point where she couldn't sign any more documents, right? She couldn't amend that to add an alternate. And then we had to go to a guardianship to have someone appointed to take care of her. And that creates a lot of delays and a lot of problems when you're trying to help with someone's care plan.
Absolutely. And in a lot of circumstances, it's not necessarily a person that you would want to be making decisions for you anyway. So, you know, again, choosing the people that you feel are going to, you know, work on your behalf, because we see that happen a lot too. They want to do guardianship so they can like tell somebody what to do, right? Because it aligns with what they feel like that person, individual, should be doing, not necessarily what the individual themselves sort of wanted.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. And if you want to give us a call, I just want to give out the number again. It's 518-476-5900. You can give us a call. We can answer your questions. Or if you know, don't want to go on the air, you can give us a call during the week, ask a question, or set up a time to talk to us. That's 518-465-7581. So, in terms of making arrangements, I love this. There's a booklet that we have that we give out to our clients that says what my family needs to know. And I think that's really a great resource that a lot of people should try and fill out if they can in advance. A lot of this goes to your point, Kim, of letting people know what you would want done. And it can be, it should be your medical information. It can also be your financial information and your legal information. And it's really beneficial to have that all in one place, in one book for people to look at.
Right, because it's not always about just the healthcare proxy power of attorney, right? It's also about what insurance you have. It's also about, where documents are located. It's about a lot of different things because, again, if there's an emergency, if there's a crisis, we need to be able to know where to access all of these things. And, sometimes it's not as simple as a lockbox or, whatever. So it names, and it really helps us, too, when we're planning, when we're doing the Medicaid planning, to understand, is there a life insurance policy? Is there, what is there that we need to look for? Because a lot of times we find things that were very unexpected or that were not known, or, so it just makes it easier for the folks who are going to have to do the planning on our behalf to really understand what's there.
That's right. So if we're doing a plan where we need to have you eligible for Medicaid, we need to know all of your assets and we need to know all of your income. And, there's all different types of clients. Some people come in with a very detailed list that, someone have been keeping of all their assets and income. They're very, good at the financial matters. Or sometimes they come in and they have, a few scattered pieces of mail, maybe because their mom or dad didn't make a list. And now the child is trying to figure out just from the mail, like, what accounts do they have? And that can be very difficult to pull together. So the more you can organize that and put that together, the better it is for your family. We send out a questionnaire to clients before they come in. That's one good way to organize your information. This book goes, like you said, into more detail in terms of insurance or medications or, where your retirement and insurance plans are, where family members are the people to contact, other family members or friends who can help out. I think that's really part of a good estate plan is also gathering all your information together.
Right. So in terms of... Go ahead, sorry.
No, that's fine. Go ahead. I'm sorry, when we can't see each other, it's a little bit difficult, a little bit not smooth.
The other things I was going to say, and, this is something that we deal with, too, is when you're gathering information, a lot of times people say, I'm not eligible or I'm not qualified, or they have professionals. I mean, we just had this circumstance this week where we had somebody come in, and say, well, we were told that we weren't going to be eligible because we weren't going to be able to use the pooled income trust for this, or we had too much income, or whatever the case may be. And, we were able to say to them, that's not the case at all, and kind of changed the whole trajectory of the circumstance for them. So, again, I always encourage people to get the proper information from the proper source. Folks try to give as much as they can, but sometimes when you're not, actually providing that service, it's hard to understand all of the ins and outs, right?
Right. So, don't try and get your information about Medicaid on the internet, right? There's a lot of information out there. Some of it's good, some of it's bad. But you're not going to know how to weed out the bad information. So just to expand on that one, a lot of clients come in or are told that I make too much money to qualify for Medicaid. And that's actually one of the myths that's out there, because you may not make too much money for Medicaid, especially for community Medicaid. When we're talking about care at home, which is where most people want to be, if you have too much money, there's options that you have with that excess income where you can get qualified for community Medicaid. So we can almost always get you qualified, you know, even if you do have too much income. You can put that income into something called a pooled supplemental needs trust, where you can still qualify for Medicaid and then make use of that pooled supplemental needs trust to pay for your expenses. And that's something that we really, you know, help clients figure that out and how to use that pooled income trust. It's a really great resource for our clients.
Right. And I love that, you know, we form partnerships too with different organizations because, you know, again, we utilize NYSARC a lot for our pooled income trust and they're right here local. And they're just a fabulous organization that will sit down with clients and help them sort of look through all of their things and say, we can pay this, we can pay this. These are all the different things, especially when we've got somebody who might have a median income and have a fair amount that they need to, you know, put away per month in order to qualify.
That's right. If you have, you know, if your income, and I'll just say the Medicaid income allowance is only $900 a month. So that's what people hear. They find out and they say, okay, I'm never going to qualify for Medicaid, right? Because I make more than $900 a month. Well, if you have more than $900 a month of income, you can put that extra income into a pooled income trust. That'll get you qualified for Medicaid. And then you can use that money in that pooled income trust to pay your living expenses. You don't lose access to those funds. You just have to go through the trust then to have access to those funds. And you can pay your rent. You can buy groceries, you know, pay for medical expenses that aren't covered. And that allows you to get on community Medicaid, which lets you get the care in the home that you need. You know, we talk a lot about community Medicaid because why? Because that's where people want to be, right? They'd rather be at home. And we want to explore every tool that we have to try and keep you at home as long as we can. And community Medicaid is one of the, you know, important pieces of that plan to keeping people at home.
Absolutely. And a lot of times people just think it's home care, but it's utilizing all of those other services that we've talked about, day program, mm-hmm. transport. And, you know, having the ability to have modifications made to your home so that it's more accessible, so that you can stay independent and you can live in your home more comfortably. So there are lots of things that come along with having community Medicaid. It's not just care. I mean, certainly that's a huge component, but there are a lot of other services and resources we can access.
That's right, and there's even different programs under community Medicaid. There's a few that you can select from, and Tim, we've done a webinar lately where you kind of delve into the waiver program. This waiver program has different names, right? It's the NHTD program, and maybe you could explain what the NHTD program is and what it pays for.
Sure, and it always terrifies people when I mention it. So it stands for the Nursing Home Transition Diversion Waiver Program. And, of course, when the minute you say nursing home, people are like, I don't want to go to the nursing home.
Right.
We understand. So we're either transitioning folks out, which means people who have gotten sort of stuck in a nursing home and, you know, haven't really found a way out, or it's diverting them from. And most of the people that we work with are diverting from because that would be really one of the only alternatives for them for the supervisory level of care that they need if this program didn't exist. And what's great about the NHTD waiver is in addition to providing hours of care that include, you know, bathing, dressing, you know, all of the assistance with the activities of daily living, it also provides hours for oversight and supervision. So really important for our folks that have memory impairments. It could even be mild memory, short-term memory loss, you know, mild cognitive impairment because, you know, who's going to be there to remind you to take your medication properly? Who's going to be there to supervise that you're taking it right? Who's going to be there to make sure that you're eating the way you're supposed to eat. So these are all, you know, how they look at when we qualify somebody. You know, depending on the region, there are a lot more hours per day that you can qualify for. Of course, the big issue still remains having the actual caregiver to fill those hours. But there are lots of creative ways that we're working with different organizations and private staff and things like that to make these plans work. So that's another sort of benefit to working with, you know, a firm like ours to do these kinds of things, because we sort of know all of the ins and outs and we kind of understand how to be creative and think outside the box and utilize other organizations and agencies to kind of help fill the gaps, and not just the standard, well, there's no home health aide, so we really can't help you sort of thing. You know, we look at things from all angles to see what else we can explore.
That's right. And Kim, you have a lot of connections where you can kind of brainstorm with other professionals, because that is becoming a bigger problem, is, you know, finding home health workers to fill the hours. You know, so you can look to family members. You could look to other ways in the community. You know, the family members, that's a different program, right? The consumer directed program. Sometimes that program is appropriate because you can hire your own individuals to be the caregivers. You know, it could be family, it could be friends or neighbors or a connection that you have yourself. And you find that person and they can work and they get paid by Medicaid, for taking care of you. Sometimes that is a good solution when you can't find a caregiver.
It's a great solution, and particularly for our folks that may have higher needs. And we have someone who we worked with about 2 years ago who was younger, 54, and she had a horseback riding accident. And Consumer Direct was a much better model for her because she was a quadriplegic. So there are lots of things that Consumer Direct worker can do that's outside the scope of someone who is a personal care aide, which is generally what most programs use. So it's really understanding sort of what each program is, what they offer, and how to access them the most, you know, appropriately. Because again, especially with all of the new assessment requirements and, you know, need for the activities of daily living assistance increasing, like, we really have to sometimes do a lot of coaching to help our families qualify for the maximum ability that they can.
That's right. And there's, you referenced some changes. There's constantly changes, I guess I can say, to the Medicaid law. I mean, most recently there have been changes to qualifications and to who assesses you. You know, we talk a lot about the look back period and how that's been changing. There's, you know, currently no look back period for community Medicaid. So that means if you have a trust and you set it up and it has not been 5 years and you want to apply for community Medicaid, you can apply because there's no look back period. That is changing, though. There possibly will be a look back period, and we, you know, keep up to date on that and keep you informed about when that is going to be put into place. That's going to be a 2.5-year look back period that will likely be imposed sometime in 2023. But you need to, you know, make sure that, you know, who you're working with is really up on the latest laws so that you know you're getting the good information. And, you know, Kim, you're up to date on some of the laws about how assessments are done for home care Medicaid and who does those assessments. And that's changed recently.
It has changed, and, you know, it is a little bit more challenging in that there are more steps involved, for sure. And so, again, a lot of what we do, in addition to, you know, just doing the qualifying, this is what I say to people, you know, Medicaid's two parts. There's the financial qualification, there's the medical qualification. So, really, my focus is helping families maximize that medical eligibility, so that they can access as much as they're, you know, that they're entitled to. So there's a lot of those things that we do, and we all work together as a team to kind of
help people, you know, access what they're eligible for. And there's not a lot of hocus pocus, and there's not a lot of black magic that we do. You know, everything that we do and that we work for the client to make sure that they are getting what they're, you know, what you're simply just eligible for and what you're entitled to.
Right, right. We're not advocating for you to get more than what you're entitled to. It's just that you need to be informed about what the rules are so you can get the care that you're entitled to. And sometimes when you're not informed, you aren't going to be able to, you know, maximize the benefits, apply for the right program. It all comes back to being an advocate for yourself or your loved one to make sure that you do get the right care. I mean, you have to do that when you're doing the home care, Medicaid. You have to do that when you're doing medical information, meaning with doctors. You need to be an advocate for the person that you're caring for. And that's right. One of the important things that you can do.
Now, again, if you'd like to call in, we love your questions. We always love to hear what people are thinking about. So please feel free to call in. And I just lost the number, so Jane, can you give the number out?
It's 518-476-5900. And we certainly have time for a question if you want to call in. You know, there's a lot of things to manage when you're a caregiver, right? So we're talking about medical information, you know, community services such as, you know, the home care, or the daycare, or the transportation, the legal aspects of things, which is why it's really important to get help if you are a caregiver, to make sure you are accessing the help. And, you know, we want to make sure that you have the right access to all the resources that are there for you, that you're reaching out to the right places, and that you're getting support. Right, that's really what this is about. I know, for example, that Kim and I, we do a seminar for Alzheimer's, caregivers of individuals with Alzheimer's, and it's an education seminar, so they do have an idea of what resources are out there and where they can get help, and that it's very helpful to individuals.
Right, because as we know, when you're entrenched in the caregiving role, that's what you have time for. And sometimes you don't even have time for that. So to try to sit and kind of figure out what avenues you should be looking for and even what is most appropriate is super important. And this past week, I went and did two home visits. And both of them, we were examining whether or not community Medicaid was the best option. And for one, it was. But for the other one, you know, the wife is just looking for a few hours a week, and at this point, it just didn't make sense for us to look at community Medicaid, because he's also probably not going to qualify yet. And he has Parkinson's, and it's advancing pretty significantly, but by doing some simple things in the home, like adding some handrails, picking up, you know, opening the space a little bit more, getting some adaptive equipment in, it will make his mobility challenges much easier. And those are the biggest challenges they're having right now. When we look at, you know, kind of going back to qualifying, somebody needs assistance, physical assistance, with three of their activities of daily living if there's no cognitive impairment, you know, no cognitive diagnosis. So that's needing physical assistance with, you know, bathing or dressing, toileting, ambulating, transferring, continence care. And a lot of times folks don't require hands-on assistance. They might need somebody there for safety, but they don't need that physical assistance. So then we have to look at other options or what other resources are out there that will help, you know, this individual maintain independence. You know, for him, it was also looking at getting a lift chair, right? Because one of the hardest things is his wife helping him get up out of the chair. And so, you know, lift chair simply brings him to almost a standing position without any physical assistance from her, and not putting herself at risk either. So sometimes we have to kind of think, what are some other things that we can put into play that sort of stretch out what a person's capacity or abilities are, by also providing the caregiver the extra support that they need also. And it may not be a caregiver in the home. It may be other types of things that we look at.
That's right. And then, so it's giving the person the help they need at that time. But it's also planning for the future, because for that individual, we would want to make sure that the legal documents are in place and that they are prepared to, you know, because Parkinson's is going to progress, we want to make sure they are in a place where they can apply for Medicaid and that they will be eligible in the future when their needs increase. So it's really helpful to have us work as a team on that. And, you know, can you kind of make sure they get the right medical help they need? And, you know, me or David or Harry, we're thinking about the legal plan and the trust that we want to set up to make sure that they're going to be taken care of in the future. And, you know, it's never too late to plan, right? If we meet with someone and they haven't even done any legal documents, it's not too late to do that. I mean, you always should try and plan for the future.
Yeah, we have about 1 minute to go, guys. Excuse me, 1 minute.
Thank you. So you really need to plan for the future. Get your power of attorney done. Get your healthcare proxy done. Talk to us about the trust and how that can help you get eligible. And talk to Kim about the different things that you can do to, you know, plan for increased needs in the home.
Absolutely. And take care of yourself. Number one rule we always say to folks, like, it's really important to understand those resources, not only to care for your loved one, but to care for yourself as well, which is why you should join us for our yoga class on the 22nd.
Yes, that's a great idea. If you're a caregiver, you really need to take care of yourself. And we really applaud all the caregivers out there for the job that they do. It's a very difficult job. Of course, you're doing it for someone that you love, so you're going to do it for them. But we want to make sure you get the recognition and the support that you need. And thank you for spending the hour with us, and have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Estate and Medicaid Planning Hour with the Herzog Law Firm. For more information on their services, please visit herzoglaw.com. If you'd like to speak with one of their attorneys, please contact the Albany office at 518-465-7581, the Saratoga office at 518-581-8131, or their Kingston office at 845-338-6405.